And please help me welcome our speaker tonight, Jimmy from Port Fishington.
All right, Jimmy.
Hello, everyone. I'm Jimmy. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Jimmy.
I have a sobriety date. It's September 24th, 2018. The home group, it's the Port Fishington Speakers Group. Meets on Monday nights at 7:30 in Philadelphia in Kensington at 7:30 on Trenton and Cumberland. And I have a sponsor. His name is Pat. He is from Nashville. We call him Nashville Pat. I need AA, the 12 steps, God, a sponsor, a therapist. I need whatever you guys can give me to feel somewhat okay on a daily basis. And it's funny that you guys read the set-aside prayer, and the first sponsor I actually used, whose name was Lex, had me write that down in my big book before we started working the steps. And it's funny, I was so shot out that I thought that, like, he made that up, you know, and then I realized that, you know, a lot of us say that. And then it's also funny because after that he had me write, if my aunt had a dick, she'd be my uncle. And his first sponsor had him write that. And if I ever sponsor somebody, I have them write that as well. And I just look at them and I'm like, that's, my first sponsor told me to write it down, so you gotta write it down too. I did not know I was gonna share that. And, here we go. So, I was born to two parents, you know, who are still together, and yeah, I was born in Delaware County outside of Philadelphia. I have three older sisters. My father was a contractor, my mother was a stay-at-home mom, and yeah, I had a very quote-unquote normal Irish Catholic upbringing. And it's funny because I always, like, struggle with the part when, you know, you talk about when you're younger, before we became an alcoholic. And I believe that genetically I was destined to like whiskey and beer and whatever else you could give me to get out of myself. I don't know if, because I have three older sisters and none of them seem to be alcoholic. There's a couple of cousins I got who are in the program. I had an uncle who was in the program. I got some dry drunks in my family. And, my grandfather, who I never met, died a year before I was born from cirrhosis of the liver. So yeah, like in Bill's story, like when I was younger, my mom would kind of, you know, there would be mention that you kind of got to watch out for drinking, like, but I didn't really know what that meant. And it's funny, I've never shared this, but I'm going to tonight because this weekend I drove out to this retreat. There was this men's retreat. It's the stag, it's men's stag meeting in Westchester, Pennsylvania. And they have a retreat that's like outside of Pottstown. And I wasn't able to go. I had to work on Saturday, but I just wanted to go for the meeting and the bonfire. And I took a buddy of mine from Philly out with me. And it's where it was is not far away from where I grew up. I grew up in a small town called Chester Springs, which is in between Phoenixville and Downingtown. But where the retreat was really close to where I went to elementary school. I went to this Catholic school in Kimberton, Pennsylvania called St. Basil's the Great. And it's funny, for some reason, I'm gonna stop by here and tell my buddy Diggs this story. And, this is gonna paint a picture of I was primed for a drink. I needed a drink in fourth grade. And, after I tell you this story, you'll understand. Catholic school, it was a Friday. I don't know if it was Stations of the Cross or whatever, but like whole schools in the church, my grade had to like read up on the podium and, I was like a spazzy ADHD kid who like didn't do his homework and was just always misbehaving. And, Mrs. DiCecco, my fourth grade teacher, and it's funny, she was on my four-step. I asked her to go to the bathroom. I was like really nervous because I needed to get up in front of the class and I really had to pee. And it's funny, she didn't let me go to the bathroom, and I go up to the podium like I am now and start to read and pissed my pants in front of the whole school. And, it's funny because where I lived, I was one of only two kids that went to this school. And I shared a short bus with mentally disabled people who went to like another school. I would ride a short bus to school every day and like would get made fun of about it. But like, legitimately that day, I like went home in gym sweatpants with my pee-pee pants in a bag on a short bus with mentally disabled people. And, if I could have had an opiate or some whiskey that night, like it would have, it's funny because I can like laugh about it now, but that was like the first time I don't know if I thought about killing myself. I was in fourth grade, but like the thought of not being alive or not being in existence at that moment, like fourth graders are rough. Even in high school, like I ended up moving to public school the next year, and there was a rumor that I like went to public school because I peed my pants in front of the whole school, which wasn't true. Whatever. But yeah, I would get in fights on the baseball field, and like in high school, people would still be like, "Oh, you're the kid who pissed his pants. I remember you." And like, it's funny because it was just like, I was just full of shame and like fear, you know, like. And that was one moment. Like, I didn't start drinking or using drugs until I was about 12. I think I was 7th grade. And, I'm a skateboarder. I started skateboarding in like 95, and like, I still skateboard. I'm about to turn 40, and, my parents still ask me, like, why are you still doing that? But that was also, like, the first time, like, obsession showed up into my life. I started skateboarding, stopped playing sports, and, just kind of fell in with other kids in the 90s who skateboarded, and, I had my first drink in this nature preserve across the street from my parents' house in probably like 95. And, I don't know, you know, it definitely, I don't know if I had a white light moment, but I definitely was like, I identified as just like someone who likes to party, someone who doesn't care about school. And I just skateboard and listen to punk rock and rap music and, you know, fell in with that crowd and fell in with a lot of older kids as well. I had three older sisters who dated skateboarders and hanging out with 10th graders when I'm in 7th grade. And, you know, started experimenting with a lot of stuff and just identified as I became a stoner skater who liked to party. And, it was a lot of fun. I'm not going to lie. And I barely graduated high school and, you know, would go to house parties and whatnot in the suburbs growing up. And then, you know, had dreams of like doing something with skateboarding and graduated from high school and like college wasn't really on my mind, didn't have good enough grades, and ended up in Philly for a little while, valet parking, and then summer of summer of 03 going into, around 04, I moved to San Diego, bought a one-way ticket, planned on going on vacation there, but just kind of knew I wasn't coming back, and, that's when, my alcoholism really kind of ramped up. I, one-way ticket, $700 in a duffel bag, slept on my buddy's couch for a while, and fell in with some other skateboarders who liked the party like I did, and just worked random jobs and, hung out on the beach and had fun. And it's funny because I didn't really realize it at the time, but how it would kind of go was people come to San Diego to party, period. And in the summertime, you can just feel the population kind of double. And from May to end of September, people would always be visiting me. My buddies were from Rhode Island, so his buddies from Rhode Island. We always had someone on the couch, beers, and I literally would end up drinking from May to September. And I remember waking up from a nap in a full-fledged panic attack, but not really knowing. I was going through alcohol withdrawal because I was drinking Bacardi Gold fucking all summer long, and just woke up in fear and terror and was I gotta get back to the East Coast. I gotta get back to the East Coast. I don't know what I'm doing here. I don't know what I'm doing. And just bugged out and I gotta move home and move back to my parents, 22. And, this is started the cycle of just running from myself, but not really knowing what my condition was, not knowing why. And, we'd come back east and be I need to come back east and just live at my parents and drink all their booze and crash their car. I crashed the car and almost joined the military. No one suggested AA. They were you need discipline. I almost joined the Coast Guard. I'm scared of water. I'm scared of the ocean. I just didn't want to join the Marines or the Army. My father was in the Marines and my grandfather was a lieutenant colonel in the Army. And, I was I'll join the Coast Guard. And then I ended up smoking weed the night before the physical, and that didn't happen. And I got a job at a health food store and, continued skateboarding and stuff would happen. I ended up going on this trip to Barcelona with a bunch of skateboarders, filmed some stuff, got a little bit of recognition, little ego boost. I'm doing good. And, and it's funny, that was in the summertime, and then following fall, I got arrested in Westchester at a Halloween party, and luckily I had a little bag of weed on me, and got introduced to drug court. I am a graduate of Chester County Drug Court. Very proud to say that. If anybody knows about drug court, it's not an easy thing to thank you. Yeah. I made it through, and I went into drug court just somebody who drank and smoked weed and would take a pill here and there, snort a line here and there. And, I'm bringing this up because it was my first introduction to AA. I would go to the Malvern Center, get people to sign my slip. And, when they would talk to me about AA, I'd just be like, nah, man, it was just a mistake. I just got arrested one night, and I remember a buddy of mine from high school who was, in there, and he was coming off of heroin and whatever. I'm like, he needs to be here, but I don't need to be here. But I remember hearing somebody talk about their drinking once. I still don't know who it was, but he was talking about being alone with nothing in his apartment, listening to the same record over and over again, drinking whiskey. I remember sitting there being like, I know that. I know that insanity of being up at night just fucking drowning your sorrows in booze. I know that insanity. But I'll make it to AA when I'm older. I knew in my heart that someday I probably need to be there, but not now. And Yeah, that year I made work and money my god. I saved up the most amount of money I ever saved up and graduated drug court and was like, started talking to some woman that I'd met in San Diego, moved to Oakland, and we were in love and blah, blah, blah. And I graduated drug court and I'm moving back to California and I'm never coming back to Pennsylvania. And obviously I'm here in Quakertown right now. So, you know, I end up in Oakland, California, probably 2008. My life on Facebook looks so cool. Like, yeah, I moved out there, immediately got a job, had money in my pocket. Yeah, but still had that, like, internal, you know, that internal shit going on that we call alcoholism, but I didn't know what it was. And I'm out there, I don't know anybody, I just know my girlfriend, and, you know. Yeah, there were moments where, like, my drinking was always a problem. I'm also the dude who will black out and urinate somewhere where he's not supposed to, you know? Like, I'm that dude. And I was working with this kid who had broke his back, and I ended up tweaking my ankle a little bit. And, yeah, he gave me this green pill that had OC and 80 on the other side, and... you know, told me not to take a lot of it because it's powerful, and took a little piece, and whew, made me feel better. and it also made it so I could take a little bit of this, go out drinking, and I didn't have to get blacked out drunk anymore. I could appear to be a normal drinker, smoke a little bit of weed, and it's fine, you know? And it's funny because I say that, like in those years, yeah, went on another skate trip to Europe with some people and, like, took road trips all up and down California and fucking was just my life on Facebook looked amazing. Anytime I come back to Philly, I remember being at Victory with friends and them being like, wow, man, you really, like, calmed down. You really got your shit together. In the meantime, I'm got this dirty little secret. No one knows. No one knows except this kid I'm working with and the guy I ended up, you know, like, and around 2010, the girl I was dating wanted to go back to grad school and was just like, you know, I was looking at Penn and you're from Philly, why don't we move back to Philly? And I'm like, yeah, yeah. And it's funny, I knew I had this dirty little secret and I just thought I could stop. I'm going to stop. And we're going to drive across the country and I'm going to get back to Philly and it's going to be okay. And yeah, I did. I stopped and we drove across the country. And by the time we got to Colorado and I ended up hanging out with my best friend, like, I was like, I'm fine. Like, I'm just going to go back to Philly. And that was just a period that I was on. I figured I could just move on and grow up at some time. I just thought I was going to magically just grow up and become normal. And yeah, let's just say if you got an opiate problem and you're trying to move back and you're moving to Philadelphia, like, yeah, it went rough and it went bad. It went bad quick. And yeah, like, tolerance goes up. And it's funny, I was working in San Francisco, my rent was $300 a month in Oakland. For some reason, I just, like, landed in this sweet spot. I was saving money while partying and doing drugs in California. And I come back to Philly and, yeah, my usage went up and the job I got, I was making less money and things got weird. And somewhere around 2010, I told the truth to my girlfriend, what I had been doing for the last 2 years. And yeah, she was like, why are you taking that stuff? My aunt who died from cancer took that stuff. I was like, I have anxiety and I'm depressed, you know, and that was me going into AA for the first time. Cause I knew this friend who was a junkie that got sober through AA. So I went to AA in Philly, got a sponsor, didn't know what the hell I was doing. I remember him telling me, he's like, if you don't, like, get your shit together, like, the girl's going to leave, you're going to lose your job, and eventually you'll die. And I was just like, whatever. And, you know, I didn't know what I was up against. Like, I always thought I could figure this out. And, yeah, the girl left. She moved to Portland. It's funny, I just texted her. She's married and, like, happy, and we're cool. And, like, it was just weird. I happened to, like, text her the other day because I was by my old apartment, and it's weird how relationships change, and I'm really happy that she's married and there's no, but whatever. She left and I was a mess, and thank God she left, because I probably would have died. And she left. I didn't think I ever needed to go to rehab. I had a therapist who told me I needed to go to rehab, and I told her to go F herself, threw my copay down and walked out and never saw her again. And she left. I literally moved out of my apartment and then checked myself into rehab the next day when I moved back to my parents' house. That was in July of 2011. And the whole time I had this job, you know, I was a manager at this job, and I need to get out. They need me. And, you know, I ended up getting out of rehab early, not AMA, like, manipulated my way out. And 40 days later, I'm stealing my mom. I found some Vicodin fives, you know, like I can't live in my own skin. 40 days later, I'm relapsing. My mom has a bad back, and yeah, took fucking her Vicodin fives, which led to me in AA nodding out, being like, no, I'm sober, I'm not drinking, I'm sober, you know, and people are like, dude, you're not fucking sober. And yeah, and then I went to my second rehab and took a leave of absence from work, and really, like, you know, I started doing yoga in rehab, and, like, the time I was a manager at a health food store, and, you know, got out of rehab and was really into going to yoga class, and I'd go to meditation meetings, and was eating sauteed spinach and salmon and shit like that. And I asked this kid Rob to be my sponsor, I knew from high school, who was real messed up, and now he looked better, but I don't trust anybody, but I'll mess with Rob. But anytime he would talk about the big books or try to get me to actually do anything, I just, like, was like, you know, and, like, kind of just hung out in AA and fellowshipped, and started skateboarding again, and, like, that came back, and was just like, oh, I'm better at skateboarding again. Skateboarding sober after you do yoga is, like, you know, and, like, that was my program. And someone, I was hanging out with some people in AA in Philly, and someone said that there's, like, yeah, there's people in AA that smoke weed. I was like, really? Really? You mean, like, you can do that? Like, there's people who actually, like, work the program and just smoke weed? And, like, all I just needed to hear that one thing, and it planted the seed, and then it took me a little while to act on it, but then I did that, and then felt guilty about it, and then told my sponsor, and my sponsor was like, dude, you need to tell on yourself, start over. I had this genius idea while driving to the Malvern men's meeting on Wednesday night, like, I'm not fucking going back on some weed. And I bought a bottle of Glenlivet, a little pint bottle, and at that point, I hadn't had a drink of alcohol in 16 months, and my intention was to just drink and start over tomorrow. If you're an alcoholic who's not been working a program and white-knuckling it for 16 months, it feels good to get drunk. It feels good to get some relief. And, I got drunk. Went to that meeting, made a fool out of myself, and did the 30-day dance for a little bit. It's funny, I ended up breaking my arm skateboarding, which led me to a hospital, which led me to blah, blah, blah. And then I had this moment where it's funny, with my dog Pistachio, I went on this, like, long hike What's up, Pistachio? He's in the car over there. But I went on this long hike and had this moment where I was like, I don't want to be a junkie, but I don't want to be an AA, and I really don't want to do this, like, 24-hour, 30-day, 60-day. I was just like, I'm going to go drink, and that's what I did. And nothing really bad happened. I had a lot of fun. I was living on a farm out in Pottstown in Coventryville and just drinking wine and going to farm parties with other hippies and shit and thought I was fine. Then my buddy called me and was like, I got a job. My buddy has I was helping my friend build greenhouses, and if I just stay away from the other stuff, I think I'll be good. And my friend from Colorado hit me up and was like, yo, we got a room for rent, $400, bro, like, come out here, just don't be on opiates. And yeah, next thing I know, me and Pistachio are driving to Colorado. At that point, I'm living with my parents, I got money saved up, I'm health insurance, blah, 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 like, you know, was sober for 16 months. And then when I drink, I end up in the car with my dog, and, you know, we're in Nebraska, and he's looking at me like, what the fuck are we doing, you know? And then, yeah, I end up in Colorado and make friends with a lot of people who work at New Belgium Brewery. And, you know, it's just like, I'm just going to drink microbrews. But I'm an alcoholic, and that didn't work out. And I moved in with my best friend and his fiance, and I had trouble finding work. It was like, it's funny, when I showed up there, my gut was like, we shouldn't be here. And I just kept hitting the wall. I went to a couple meetings there, but was just like, didn't really get into it. And then eventually drove back with Pistachio to my parents' house, stopped in Chicago at my sister's house first. And I was like, I'm going to drink with my sister, and then when I get home, I'm going to be sober. And I literally got to my parents' house and remember just like downing a bottle of white wine to go to bed. And ended up back on the farm building greenhouses, and where my alcoholism takes me to is I was snorting heroin and building greenhouses. Like, and I thought that being an organic farmer, like, maybe if I'm an organic farmer, I'll, like, I don't know, cure my alcoholism, but it didn't. And, yeah, so May 21st of 2014, it was up, you know, it was up. I had a wild weekend that ended kind of weird with this female, and I may or may not have dropped a bag of heroin in her house, I'm not sure. But, and I knew her parents were coming over, and for some reason I called her to be like, because I went home to, like, get well, and was like, uh-oh. For some reason, I called her, and was like, I may have dropped something. And for some reason, I told her the truth, and I remember being like, who the hell are you? I was like, I don't know. And for some reason, her saying, who the hell are you, was like God saying it. It's funny, I saw her, like, years ago, and wanted to, like, be like, yo, God spoke through you. But yeah, that set in a series of events where I ended up on the farm with my buddy and told him the truth. And at that moment, I was building a chicken coop, and I had to put a window on the chicken coop. And I'm like, dude, I need to put the window on the chicken coop. He's like, fuck the chickens, dude. Like, the chickens can die. Like, go get help. And he was like, call Bernard. Bernard was this guy that I was friends with. He plays music therapy for people in rehab. I'm still really good friends with him. He's helped a lot of people. I hit Bernard up. He met me in Phoenixville. And, yeah, it was the first decision set in events. See, I woke up, you know, got all messed up for the last time. That was May 23rd, 2014. Woke up in White Deer Run. And for some reason, it was Memorial Day weekend, and I was like, what happened? I'm 30 years old, and I'm at rehab, and I had nothing. State funding got me there, and only had 5 days of detox. I ended up at my parents' house, and back at my parents' house, like, fully detoxing. Like, and I remember it was, like, a real humid day, and I got home, and, like, there was this moment where I was about to, like, lay in my bed and take a nap, but just something told me, like, go to Westchester, like, go to Westchester and find sober people. And I went to this coffee shop called Fenario's, and there used to be a meeting in the upstairs there, and I literally was just like, I'm just going to go sit in Fenario's and drink coffee until I see somebody from AA. And I saw this kid, Chris, while I was in rehab, I had this vision or this thought, which I believe was God. Like, you gotta call Lex. And Lex was this dude, drug and alcohol counselor, said he used to live in California also, punk rock, but like Lex, like, dressed nice and had a nice car and a family and like, would always try to be friendly with me, but I was like, I don't, whatever, for some reason I just didn't understand him, didn't really like him because he was happy and sober, you know, I didn't fucking understand that. Because my life was miserable, and something told me to call Lex. I was like, you need, Lex can help you. And I see this kid, Chris, at the coffee shop, and I went and bought, he had to buy books for community college, and I just went to, like, Delaware County Community College with him. Like, whatever, I'll go with you. And, like, I was like, do you have Lex's phone number? I called Lex, left a crazy voicemail. I still leave him crazy voicemails, and it was like, I need your help, man. I need your help. And, like, he called me back and was like, I'm so glad you're alive. Meet me at the 307 Clubhouse on Friday. I met him at the 307 Clubhouse on Friday. And he was like, this is your home group. I said, okay. And at that point, I needed people to make decisions for me. I was not capable of making any decisions at that point in my life. And I literally, too, and it just so happened some crazy shit was going on at the farm. It was like a fucking soap opera. I'm not even going to get into it, but yeah, it was drama, infidelities, not with me, but like, yeah, I'm out of rehab. Bunch of stuff happened, chapter 7 or whatever, bankruptcy, so like my hours got cut down. I was literally only working 2 days a week. My parents were like, hey, don't worry about rent. Just get better. And even the guy I was working for was just like, dude, just get better. So I was able to go to 2 meetings a day. I would literally just drive into Westchester, go to the 12 o'clock, hang out at the coffee shop. My buddy has a skate shop in Westchester. I'd hang out at the skate shop and then wait around and go to another meeting, and literally did that for a while and like hung on Lex's coattails and told and did whatever he told me to do. Ended up on my knees outside of a dumpster, outside of 307 Clubhouse, said the third step prayer, and then he had me bring a notebook that night, drew some lines in it, blah, blah, blah. Do your fourth step, you have 2 weeks to do it. And, like, I needed that. I needed a deadline at that moment. Like I said, I can't make decisions, but I'm also a people pleaser, so if you tell me I need to do something, like, I want you to like me. You know, I found that out through being sober, and I did the best I possibly could on that fourth step. And it's funny that P story I told you in the beginning, like I told that story and some other stuff I was very ashamed of and thought that I was going to take to my grave, and he didn't flinch, he didn't blink, told me some stuff and whatever. He was just like, it's a human experience. Messed up shit happens, you know, and it made me feel like, okay, you know, like, it actually also made me, like, understand what AA is. It made me feel a part of it. I remember driving home that night, or I biked home that night, and I felt, like, very free. It was, like, in July, it was a warm summer night, and, yeah, next thing you know, like, sponsoring 6 people, I got a car, got money in the bank, you know, like, got some skateboards, Pistachio's living a better life, you know. Relationship, everything that we want, I ended up getting this job that, like, you know, like, I thought would change me. And it did. I thought I was doing great. And February 2017, I spoke about that stag meeting. I was leading the stag meeting, and I found myself not sober. Yeah, I found myself not sober in an AA meeting because I had heard a podcast about this stuff called Kratom. I like to roll my own cigarettes and saw it. It's funny, I saw it and then like cataloged it in my head. And yeah, one day just was in the smoke shop and let me get that. And I'm at the meeting and I'm like, oh shit, I'm not sober. And around the same time too, my life brought me into Philadelphia, into Kensington, into the gentrified side of Kensington. But yeah, I relapsed. Took me a little while to get honest, but I eventually got honest and then moved to Philly and heard shit from people that Jimmy relapsed and moved to Kensington and is now on heroin, and that wasn't the truth, but that's usually what happens with people like us. So at this point, I don't blame people for thinking that, but I copped a huge resentment towards AA and was just like, fuck that, you know? And stopped going to meetings for a little while and then got crazy and was telling, and was in and out of AA and then eventually was like, well, I've always wanted to be the dude who smokes weed in AA, so. Yeah, I became that dude. I would go to the Last Stop a lot and be like, I'm doing better than these fucking people, So, let me fast forward this. Something happened. God showed up again. God would always show up the whole time. It's funny, I was trail running, going to saunas, I was doing everything to make myself feel okay except God and AA. If you're someone like me, you'll end up in your basement looking at the joist where the holes to the old electric is going and being like, yeah, that could hold me up. Yeah, that's what happens to me when I'm fucking smoking weed. And I'm the angriest person smoking just weed. I was miserable and not fun to be around. But somewhere around August of 2018, I end up at a skate park in Radnor, Pennsylvania on a Tuesday. My days off were Monday and Tuesday. It was a hot summer day, and it was just me and this other kid from Bucks County who I knew through the Philly skate scene and knew he had had issues with opiates. And he had moved back and forth between California. We literally, have a very similar story, and was skating with him, and for some reason, before I left, I was like, hey man, I've heard you've had struggles, I told him, what I was doing. I don't drink anymore, I don't do opiates, but I told him what I was doing, and just gave him my phone number. It was if you ever find yourself in a weird spot, hit me up. Two weeks later, he hit me up. He had OD'd on Aramingo Avenue and crashed his car. For some reason, I hadn't seen this kid in over a decade. For some reason, I was the second person he called after his parents. And that week was hilarious because I took him hiking. I took him to the Russian Spa in Southampton. If you see someone who's detox and jump in a cold pool, it was insane. But I remember we were smoking a vape pen at the Russian Spa and he was asking me what should I do, and the only answer I had for him was dude, you gotta go to AA and you gotta go to rehab, or you gotta go to rehab and go to AA. And then light bulb went off in my head and I was like, I need to go back to AA or I'm going to be ODing on Aramingo Avenue before I know it. And it didn't happen immediately because that was late August and my sobriety date's September 24th. But whatever, I ended up at some event in Westchester at the skate shop, and then afterwards saw a mutual friend, went to a meeting, and literally me getting sober this time
was walking into work, handing my vape pen to my coworker and being like, I can't do this anymore. And it was a Monday, and I went home and walked up to Port Fishington and was not happy. I was not happy at all. And a couple weeks later, I end up at this dude Ante's house. He was my neighbor, this fucking crazy Croatian guy. And I'm losing my mind. I hate my girlfriend. I hate my job. And I came in freaking out. And he like stopped me and started yelling at me. He's like, yo, bro, what the fuck are you doing, bro? I was like, no, I don't know. And he literally yelled at me and was like, I'm going to be your fucking sponsor. You're going to die. And I said, okay. I just said, okay. And like, it's funny, by just saying okay, like I was just talking to somebody. I went to Croatia this past winter, like with Ante, and I work with him now. I'm no longer in that relationship, and I'm no longer in that job that I thought was going to change my life, that I fucking hated. And yeah, and I do construction work with Ante now. He is no longer my sponsor. He is a really good friend of mine, and I consider him family. And yeah, I also believe genetically, like my grandfather, like I said, was a lieutenant colonel in the army, alcoholic. My father's a Marine. My uncle, I needed a Croatian war vet to like yell at me and be like, yo, you're full of shit. And like, for me to hear the message, I can't have some like hippie who's like meditating, like be like, it's okay, man, just let it go. Like, I need an Eastern European yelling at me to hear the message of God, you know, like, and realize that like I'm completely full of shit. My ways don't work anymore. And yeah, it's been amazing. Like, it's literally, this sobriety ride has been amazing. And for me also, like, God's a huge part of AA. Like, and one thing I realized coming back was like, I just had a moment where I had to be like, all right, I got to do the as if, I got to pray, I gotta do the steps, I gotta buy in, I gotta try as hard as I can to like beat this thing, because I will die an alcoholic death, like, period. Like, I'm destined to, I believe I'm destined to drink again if I start like believing my own bullshit. And yeah, man, and also like one of the most powerful things about AA that I wanna touch on is just like allowing, like, being patient and allowing this thing to work. Like, in 2014, when I got sober, I did a lot of lip service amends to my family, and a lot of just, like, check the box, let's get this done fast. And, yeah, I sat down with Ante and really, like, took a look at, like, who I am, and, like, made a conscious decision to be, like, more of a part of my family, you know, like, I consider myself the black sheep, you know, I'm the one who, like, moved to California and, like, still play on my skateboard. Most of my family's, like, married with children and careers and stuff like that, and I'm always the one who's, like, back at mom and dad's figuring it out. And, I've had a lot of opportunities to like show up for my family and a lot of gifts from doing that. And I didn't consciously like, cause they didn't even know I relapsed. Like, I just consciously like changed my ways and showed up. And my parents are getting older. My father's about to be 80. My mom's 79. And thank God they're still with me, but I try to like go out there. And then my oldest sister, who was the first person, she's, you know, social worker, first person to ever call me an alcoholic, had huge resentments towards her. I may or may not have peed in her closet at a party at her house. I don't, you know. Yeah. things were a little tense. Let's just say I used to go over her house and her husband would look at me sideways if I'd be drinking. And the last rehab I went to, she told me, she was like, yo, like, get your shit together. Because, like, if you're, like, still in your late 30s, early 40s, and you're junkie Uncle Jimmy, like, and mom and dad ain't around, like, I'm not going to help you. Like, she's a healthy person who has boundaries. And I talk to her all the time now. Like, she let me drive her daughter to the East Stroudsburg skate park. Like, her 12-year-old daughter, who the first time I held her daughter, I was high on Oxycontin. Like, I remember when she let me drive her daughter to the skate park because her daughter wants to learn how to skateboard. And I gave her her first skateboard and, like, I drove home from there, like, crying. You know, that's God. That's, like, gifts of sobriety. Like, I also got the opportunity to, my dad's little brother, my Uncle Bob, who I was always scared of growing up because he was always drunk and he was kind of crazy. He got sober. Like 20 years ago, he got sober and, he came to visit me when I went to Miramont Treatment Center and, I didn't know it then. He gave me my second big book and just like talked to me. And it's funny, I thought a bunch of shit went down in my family. Whatever. Skeletons. There's skeletons in every closet. I remember wanting to hear the shit. I want to hear the shit and why I'm an alcoholic and my alcoholic grandfather, blah, blah, blah. He just talked about his alcoholism. I didn't realize it then, but a seed was planted and me and him had this bond that was formed. And it's funny because I would relapse from time to time, but we would still just talk on the phone every couple of months, and then I got sober, and we got closer, and then pandemic happened, and he had recovered from prostate cancer, but then it came back, and, like, he would always be like, come down and visit me, and then, like, he hit me up and was like, you know, he was like, you really should come down soon. And then one day I'm at work, and I was like kind of working, kind of collecting unemployment. It was that weird time during the pandemic. And my dad called me and was just like, hey, Uncle Bob wants to know if you'll go down and stay with him and take care of him. You know, he's going to die soon. And then my Uncle Bob called me and was like, they're not letting me smoke cigarettes. Like, I'm in a wheelchair. He's like, how strong do you feel? You're going to have to ratchet strap me to the wheelchair. And take me, he just wanted to go outside, and I'm like, he's like, can you come down? And it was funny, he was like, how much money are you making? And I told him, and he's like, I'll pay you. And I'm like, I don't want the money. And he's like, how much you make? And I told him, I can't pay you that. And I'm like, I don't fucking care, I'm coming down. This is my Uncle Bob, like, West Philly fucking, you know. Yeah, my dad and his brothers were freaking animals. And, I drove down to Florida and, like, hung out with them, and, yeah, it was amazing. I went to his last AA meeting with him in his house. I met all his buddies, you know, who were great, and, yeah, I was fucking down in Florida, baby, looking at AR-15s outside of meetings and shit, you know, like, it was wild. Yeah, but it was really cool because he was dying, and it's funny, I went down there, and me and my cousin, I still wanted, like, questions answered, and he said something. He was just like, running a business with your family is really hard. And then the more and more I hung out with him, the more and more I was like, oh, my, like, I get where my crazy comes from. Me and my Uncle Bob were very similar people, and one of the gifts, too, was, like, I put fentanyl patches on him. I was giving him morphine, like, 4 times a day. And, like, was going to meetings every day and talking about it. And was talking to my sponsor about it. And my sponsor was just like, look at it as you're helping another alcoholic get another day. You know, like, and there's that moment they talk about in the book where the only thing between you and God, or between you and a drink, is God. And like when it's 3 o'clock in the morning and you're giving your uncle like sublingual morphine. Goddamn right, I was saying the Serenity Prayer and like hoping for whatever, you know? And yeah, and I made it through and I stayed sober and like that, like, it's funny, after that I felt like I don't feel like a black sheep anymore in my family. I feel like a part of, you know, like I might not have kids, I might not own a house, you know, I might always be, you know, at one point I'm brewing kombucha, now I'm a fucking construction worker, you know, like my family's always kind of like, wait, what are you doing? Like, you know, and like, but after that, like, I don't feel like awkward and ashamed when I show up for family stuff. And yeah, it was all through just like clean house, trust God and help others. And yeah, and it's hard to remember. It's funny because I can sit up here and say that, and like this past winter was like, that was not a good AA. Like, you know, I hit that 4-year mark and, you know, like, and then it's funny how I went through some stuff personally, had to deal with some uncomfortable shit. I didn't drink, but like, kind of like was depressed and, yeah, and I didn't quit before the miracle happened, you know, I just like, and now it's funny, it's like spring and I'm feeling good and I'm reaching out to people and going to meetings and yeah, everything's like, it's okay. I'm not exactly like, you know, like if I start comparing myself to other people, I could tell myself some bullshit, but like where I'm at now, like I remember first coming into AA and literally was just like, I don't know how people pay rent. I don't know how people have a car. Like I can't even keep a skateboard. Like I had no skateboard, a broken down car, and a bike with 2 flat tires. Now I can pay my rent. I have money in the bank. Through the pandemic with the fucking stimmy money, I bought a $2,000 bicycle, like the bicycle that I thought was going to change my life and didn't. And now I spend more time working and I can't really ride that bicycle. And, yeah, I have stuff and, but just the fact that I live by myself and I can pay rent, like, amazes me. And I have a car and it has gas and, you know, it's funny, the battery died last night and I was bugging out and I did something. I asked for help. I asked another alcoholic to help me change a battery. And I realized it's easier than putting a fucking skateboard together. But like in my head, it was like, oh my God, like could be my alternator. I don't know. My car's going to die. And you know, that's just me. Yeah. I woke up yesterday morning feeling like spiritually high and then like wanting to kill myself at the end of the day. And like, that's life, you know, it was just a car battery and I changed it and I got another day sober and it is 9 o'clock and I'm going to shut up. Thank you for letting me share.